Her door was black and thick. Spy hole at eye level, two locks. She used the keys and they went inside. She locked up again and dropped an old hinged bar into place, right across the whole doorway. Reacher pressed it down in its brackets. It was iron, and as long as it was there, nobody else was going to get in. He put her garment bag against the wall. She flicked switches and the lights came on. She waited by the door while Reacher walked ahead. Hallway, living room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, closets. Big rooms, very high. Nobody in them. He came back to the living room and shrugged off his new jacket and threw it on a chair, and turned back to her and relaxed. But she wasn't relaxed. He could see that. She was looking directly away from him, more tense than she'd been all day. She was just standing there with her sweatshirt cuffs way down over her hands in the doorway to her living room, fidgeting. He had no idea what was wrong with her. "You okay?" he asked. She ducked her head forward and back in a figure eight to drop her hair behind her shoulders. "I guess I'll take a shower," she said. "You know, hit the sack. Hell of a day, right? Unbelievable." She crabbed right around him on her way through the room, keeping her distance. She gave him a sort of shy wave, just her fingers peeping out from the sweatshirt sleeve. "What time tomorrow?" he asked. 7:30 will do it," she said. "Okay," he said. "Good night, Jody." She nodded and disappeared down the inner hallway. He heard her bedroom door open and close. He stared after her for a long moment, surprised. Then he sat on the sofa and took off his shoes, too restless to sleep right away. He padded around in his new socks, looking at the apartment. It wasn't really a loft, as such. It was an old building with very high ceilings, was all. The shell was original. It had probably been industrial. The outside walls were sandblasted brick, and the inner walls were smooth, clean plaster. The windows were huge, probably put there to illuminate the sewing machine operation, or whatever was there 100 years ago. The parts of the walls that were brick were a warm, natural brick color, but everything else was white, except for the floor, which was pale maple strips. The decor was cool and neutral, like a gallery. There was no sign that more than one person had ever lived there, no sign of two tastes competing. The whole place was very unified. White sofas, white chairs, bookshelves built in simple cubic sections, painted with the same white paint that had been used on the walls, big steam pipes and ugly radiators, all painted white. The only definite color in the living room was a life-size Mondrian copy on the wall above the largest sofa. It was a proper copy, done by hand in oil on canvas, with the proper colors. Not garish reds and blues and yellows, but the correct dulled tones, with authentic little cracks and crazings in the white, which was nearer a gray. He stood and looked at it for a long time, totally astonished. Piet Mondrian was his favorite painter of all time, and this exact picture was his favorite work of all time. The title was Composition with Red, Yellow, and Blue. Mondrian had painted the original in 1930, and Reacher had seen it in Zurich, Switzerland. There was a tall cabinet opposite the smallest sofa, painted the same white as everything else. There was a small TV in it, a video, a cable box, a CD player with a pair of large headphones plugged into the jack, a small stack of CDs, mostly 50s jazz, stuff he liked without really being crazy about. The windows gave out over Lower Broadway. There was a constant wash of traffic hum, neon blades from up and down the street, an occasional siren wailing and booping and blasting loud as it came out through the gaps between blocks. He tilted the blind with a clear plastic wand and looked down at the sidewalk. There were still the same knots of people hanging around, nothing to make him nervous. He tilted the blind back and closed it up tight. The kitchen was huge and tall. All the cupboards were wood, painted white, and the appliances were industrial sizes in stainless steel, like pizza ovens. He had lived in places smaller than the refrigerator. He pulled it open and saw a dozen bottles of his favorite water, the same stuff he'd grown to love in the Keys. He took the seal off one of them and carried it into the guest bedroom. The bedroom was white, like everything else. The furniture was wood, which had started out with a different finish, but which was now white like the walls. He put the water on the night table and used the bathroom. White tiles, white sink, white tub. All old enamel and tiling. He closed the blinds and stripped and folded his new clothes onto the closet shelf. Threw back the cover and slid into bed and fell to thinking. Illusion and reality. What was 9 years anyway? A lot, he guessed, when she was 15 and he was 24. But what was it now? He was 38 and she was either 29 or 30. He wasn't exactly sure which. Where was the problem with that? Why wasn't he doing something? Maybe it wasn't the age thing. Maybe it was Leon. She was his daughter and always would be. It gave him the guilty illusion she was somewhere between his kid sister and his niece. That obviously gave him a very inhibiting feeling. But it was just an illusion, right? She was the relative of an old friend, was all. An old friend who was now dead. So why the hell did he feel so bad about looking at her and seeing himself peeling off her sweatshirt and undoing the belt from around her waist? Why wasn't he just doing it? Why the hell was he in the guest room instead of on the other side of the wall, in bed with her? Like he'd ached to be through countless forgotten nights in the past. Some of them shameful, some of them wistful. Because, presumably, her realities were rooted in the same kind of illusions. Her kid sister and niece call it big brother and uncle. Favorite uncle, for sure, because he knew she liked him. There was a lot of affection there, but that just made it worse. Affection for favorite uncles was a specific type of affection. Favorite uncles were there for specific types of things, family things, like shopping and spoiling, one way or the other. Favorite uncles were not there to put the moves on you. That would come out of the blue like some kind of a shattering betrayal, horrifying, unwelcome, incestuous. Psychologically damaging. She was on the other side of the wall. But there was nothing he could do about it. Nothing. It was never going to happen. He knew it was going to drive him crazy. So he forced his mind away from her and started thinking about other things. Things that were realities for sure, not just illusions. The two guys, whoever they were, they would have her address by now. There were a dozen ways of discovering where a person lives. They could be outside the building right at that moment. He scanned through the apartment building in his head. The lobby door, locked. The door from the parking garage, locked. The door to the apartment, locked and barred. The windows all closed up. The blinds all drawn. So tonight they were safe. But tomorrow morning was going to be dangerous. Maybe very dangerous. He concentrated on fixing the two guys in his mind as he fell asleep. Their vehicle, their suits, their build, their faces. But at that exact moment, only one of the two guys had a face. They had sailed together 10 miles south of where Reacher lay, out into the black waters of Lower New York Harbor. They had worked together to unzip the rubber body bag and lower the secretary's cold corpse down into the oily Atlantic swell. One guy had turned to the other with some cheap joke on his lips and was shot full in the face with a silenced Beretta. Then again. And again. The slow fall of his body put the three bullets all in different places. His face was all one big fatal wound, black in the darkness. His arm was levered up across the mahogany rail, and his right hand was severed at the wrist with a stolen restaurant cleaver. 5 blows were required. It was messy and brutal work. The hand went into a plastic bag, and the body slipped into the water without a sound, less than 20 yards from the spot where the secretary was already sinking. Jody woke early that morning, which was unusual for her. Normally, she slept soundly, right up to the point when her alarm went off and she had to drag herself out of bed and into the bathroom, sleepy and slow. But that morning, she was awake an hour before she had to be, alert, breathing lightly, heart racing gently in her chest. Her bedroom was white, like all her rooms, and her bed was a king with a white wood frame, set with the head against the wall opposite her window. The guest room was back to back with her room, laid out in exactly the same way, symmetrically, but in reverse, because it faced in the opposite direction, which meant that his head was about 18 inches away from hers, just through the wall. She knew what the walls were made of. She had bought the apartment before it was finished. She had been in and out for months watching over the conversion. The wall between the two bedrooms was an original wall, 100 years old. There was a great bulk of timber lying crossways on the floor, with bricks built up on top of it, all the way to the ceiling. The builders had simply patched the bricks where they were weak, and then plastered over them the way the Europeans do it, giving a solid, hard stucco finish. The architect felt it was the right way to do it. It added solidity to the shell, and it gave better fireproofing and better soundproofing. But it also gave a foot-thick sandwich of stucco and brick and stucco between her and Reacher. She loved him. She was in no doubt about that, no doubt at all. She always had, right from the start. But was that okay? Was it okay to love him the way she did? She had agonized over that question before. She had lain awake nights about it many years ago. She had burned with shame about her feelings. A 9-year age gap was obscene. Shameful, she knew that. A 15-year-old should not feel that way about her own father's fellow officer. Army protocol had made it practically incestuous. It was like feeling that way about an uncle. Almost like feeling that way about her father himself. But she loved him. There was no doubt about it. She was with him whenever she could. Talking with him whenever she could, touching him whenever she could. She had her own print of the self-timer photograph from Manila, her arm around his waist. She had kept it pressed in a book for 15 years, looked at it countless times. For years she had fed off the feeling of touching him, hugging him hard for the camera. She still remembered the exact feel of him, his broad, hard frame, his smell. The feelings had never really gone away. She had wanted them to. She had wanted it just to be an adolescent thing, a teenage crush, but it wasn't. She knew that from the way the feelings endured. He had disappeared, she had grown up and moved on, but the feelings were always there. They had never receded, but they had eventually moved parallel to the main flow of her life. Always there, always real, always strong, but not necessarily connected with her day-to-day reality anymore. Like people she knew, lawyers or bankers who had really wanted to be dancers or ball players. A dream from the past. Unconnected with reality, but absolutely defining the identity of the person involved. A lawyer who had wanted to be a dancer. A banker who had wanted to be a ball player. A divorced 30-year-old woman who had wanted to be with Jack Reacher all along. Yesterday should have been the worst day of her life. She had buried her father, her last relative on earth. She had been attacked by men with guns. People she knew were in therapy for much less. She should be prostrate with misery and shock, but she wasn't. Yesterday had been the best day of her life. He had appeared like a vision on the steps behind the garage, above the yard, the noon sun directly over his head, illuminating him. Her heart had thumped and the old feelings had swarmed back into the center of her life, fiercer and stronger than ever, like a drug howling through her veins, like claps of thunder. But it was all a waste of time. She knew it. She had to face it. He looked at her like a niece or a kid sister. Like the 9-year gap still counted for something, which it no longer did. A couple age 15 and 24 would certainly have been a problem, but 30 and 39 was perfectly okay. There were thousands of couples with gaps bigger than that. Millions of couples. There were guys age 70 with 20-year-old wives. But it still counted for something with him. Or maybe he was just too used to seeing her as Leon's kid. Like a niece. Like the CO's daughter. The rules of society or the protocol of the army had blinded him to the possibility of seeing her any other way. She had always burned with resentment about that. She still did. Leon's affection for him, his claiming of him as his own, had taken him away from her. It had made it impossible from the start.